This is the Goat Cast.
Hi, welcome to the first episode of the Goat Cast. My name is Josh, and today we'll be talking about small farming, food, and a little bit of local life. Stay tuned. Right away, I heard silence. All right, welcome. Welcome to the GoatCast. On today's episode, we're going to talk about the GoatCast. We're going to talk about my inspiration for the podcast. We're going to talk about the subject matter. We'll go ahead and talk about who I am and why I'm doing this. And then we'll also go through the show's format and kind of build out what future episodes are going to feel like. And then at the end, we'll go ahead and have a chit-chat with my buddy Scott, and then we'll wrap things up. So let's dive in. I guess the first thing that I should probably talk about is my inspiration for the podcast. One of the things that really led me to podcasting was the fact that I've learned so much from podcasting and from, you know, YouTube videos and different things like this. And what I'm hoping happens in the future is that I can basically, you know, pass along my information, pass along the things that I've learned, but also, you know, learn from the community, kind of have this dialogue going. And so, you know, the show's going to be kind of formatted like that, and we'll kind of toss things back and forth. And I'll basically have a subject that I talk about every week, but we'll also have, you know, a section where we kind of take calls from you guys, learn what's going on out there, learn what you guys are doing, what you guys want to hear, different things like that. So I guess that's one of the things that really inspires me. The subject matter of this podcast, what we're going for is food, farm, and local life. So, you know, with food, we might talk about recipes. We might talk about, you know, interesting ways of using the whole animal, you know, in your dishes and different things like that. Really the respect that should go into food, kind of the art form, stuff like that. And with animals and farming, it'll be patterned towards mostly livestock, raising livestock, but we'll also talk about, you know, gardening and, you know, growing your own food, raising your own food, all of this, all of the above. It's going to be great. And then I guess the third thing that we're going to talk about is how we can kind of improve our local communities. How can we really enrich our lives by supporting our local, you know, our local vendors and our local merchants. And so, you know, I think that there's a lot to talk about there as well. I guess the next thing I should probably tell you guys is who I am and why I'm doing this. My name is Josh. I live in Utah, and I'm an advertising photographer, but, you know, in my spare time, I raise my own food and I grow my own food, and we do pretty well with it. We've really expanded over the last year, and it's been fun. It's just been exhilarating. And, you know, I look back at my life and how it was, and even though I've consistently cooked throughout my life and, you know, crafted my own food and my family's food, I've really, in the past couple years, just found a huge love for raising my own food and found that there is this optimal amount of, you know, respect that kind of goes back and forth between, you know, me and my family, our nourishment that we're pulling from these animals, and the, you know, the vegetables that we grow, and the animals and the vegetables themselves. You know, there's this wonderful feeling of respect, and, you know, we're feeling the nourishment, the animals are feeling, you know, like they're basically being taken care of really well. And so it's this mutual relationship. Really love that. The, you know, let me kind of outline our situation. I have a little farm here in Utah. It's very small. And that's one of the things I really want to get across to people, is that anyone can do this. And even if it's just raising a few ducks or chickens or something. But, you know, on our farm here, we have about 30 chickens. We have 5 ducks. We have some rabbits, we have some turkeys, We have five goats and we have a pig. And, you know, that right there is enough, you know, meat to last us who knows how long. It's a very long time. And, you know, each animal kind of comes in and goes out as they are needed. You know, so for instance, a pig we will raise for 10 months and then we'll take it to process. The goats are kind of long term with us. They're our dairy animals, and they are absolutely the best animals that I've ever come in contact with. Hence the name of the podcast, The Goatcast. I just absolutely love goats. They're wonderful, sweet animals. And so that's what we have here on the farm. Like I said, we don't have a huge lot of land, but it's, you know, it's sufficient and it works. One of the other things that's really helped out, and I think that we'll talk about some of this in future episodes, is I've been able to make, you know, deals with my neighbors and different things like that to, you know, grow food on their land and give them part of the harvest. We're definitely going to get into a lot of that and talk about, you know, these little micro communities that we can really develop. All right, so the next thing that I want to talk about is the show's format. Basically, the way I kind of see this all coming together in the future is we'll basically have this an intro to the show, and then we'll have a section where we take calls from you guys. In order to call us, you can go to our website. It's thegoatcast.blogspot.com, and then scroll down to the bottom and click the little contact us link. Basically, when you click on that link, it's going to pull up a little dialog box, and you just type in your phone number and hit submit, and it will call you right then. You go ahead and pick up the phone. It will have our message. It says, you know, welcome to, you know, thank you for calling the Goatcast, and then go ahead and leave your message and we'll have it on the show. And so that's the area that I kind of want to see us, you know, have this community dialogue, have a dialogue between what's happening here and what's happening with you guys. And I'd really like to build this, you know, build this up and really get to know what's going on with you guys. The next part of the podcast is going to be a feature, and each week we'll basically either talk about something that's patterned towards food, something that's patterned towards farming, or something that's about local life, localism, local, you know, local community development, stuff like that. The next feature will be, you know, news. We'll invite my friend Scott on from time to time. We may have an interview or go out to an event. We'll see how that develops. And then that's it. Basically, we'll conclude the podcast. And each week, that's sort of what to look for. And so I think that's going to go pretty well. All right. So this week, we obviously, because we're talking about the podcast, we don't have a subject that we're going to be presenting this week. Next week, we will. But we do have a section where we do bring in my buddy Scott, and we talk to him about a couple things. So we're going to go into that section, and then we'll go ahead and reconvene after that, and we'll conclude the cast. This section of the podcast is called The Scott Spot. Basically, I bring in my buddy Scott, and we chit-chat about the week's articles and news stories. The first story that we have is from the Center for Food Safety's website, and I'm just going to kind of start it out, and then Scott and I are going to talk about it. Scott, I guess you can go ahead and say hi.
Hello, everybody.
All right, so the article says, USDA releases final environmental impact statement on genetically engineered alfalfa. Agency makes no decision on approval of the Roundup Ready crop, citing harm to organic industry and proliferation of superweeds. CFS urges agency to continue ban on potentially harmful crop. It goes on to talk about all of the details around genetically modified alfalfa and such, but, you know, if you want to go ahead and go read that, you can. It's a pretty good article, and it's something to be concerned about. Let me first start off by saying, hooray!
Yeah,
It's genetically engineered alfalfa is, you know, I mean, what's the next thing that they're going to make Roundup Ready? You know, they're gonna make Roundup Ready people. You know, they
And what exactly is Roundup Ready?
What the deal is Monsanto, you know, is a huge agribiz company. They produce seeds, and what they've done in the last 10 years is they've made these Roundup Ready crops, and basically what they are is they're genetic mutations of staple crops, like corn and soy, and things like that, in which they've implanted genes into the crop to make them resistant to Roundup, weed killer. But you know, as far as them wanting to, you know, basically get genetically modified alfalfa into the market, sounds like, you know, they're putting the halt on that for right now. I read a statistic somewhere that said 93% of Americans, if given the choice between conventionally grown food and genetically modified food, they would definitely go for the conventionally grown food. The thing that really bites is that you know, Monsanto and their cronies have been able to basically legislate a lot of the labeling out of these genetically modified foods. I remember a few years back, you used to be able to walk through the grocery store and you'd see labels on packages that said made with genetically modified ingredients and such. And it seems like those have all but disappeared. And, you know, when you look into it, it's actually strategically disappeared, you know.
The good old days. Yeah. No more good old days.
Not really because we want it to disappear, because, you know, agribiz, and there's a lot of money there.
And how does that really get in effect? Because it seems like no one would want that to disappear, but yet it is. How did that happen? Was it just from the big businesses chipping away, getting legislation going through?
They have lobbyists, and the lobbyists, you know, basically inform the government that, you know, it's a good idea to... a lot of this is fought for under food safety or, you know, we need to feed the world type situations. And it really is ridiculous. I don't know why we shouldn't be told what's in our food. It, to tell you the truth, scares me. And I think it's...
You know, it's so funny that... Because they put more and more... warnings on cigarette cartons and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then they take more and more away from general foods, where they put more and more preservatives or you know, chemicals in the foods. And then they don't tell us about it. That's what I think is so funny, is that there's so many advocates against... I mean, obviously I'm not an advocate for cigarettes or anything like that. But
Scott, are you fighting for cigarettes? Are you telling us we should all start smoking or something? might be healthier for us than the crap they're putting in our food these days.
But, you know, I mean, just I'm so surprised how there's not more word of mouth about this. I mean, there's a lot of people out there, but it just doesn't seem like, I mean, just recently I've been hearing a lot from you about this. But
yeah, and I think that there is a lot of people out there that are starting to kind of open their eyes towards this. But, you know, the funny thing is, so you mentioned the cigarette thing, and this is kind of an interesting story. I was in Singapore a little while back, and their cartons of cigarettes in Singapore actually have people on them with, like, mutated legs and, like, it actually shows, like, dead babies and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, I heard about that. They'll have, like, the big pictures of the ad of a horrible thing, not just a lady, like, smoking out of her neck, but, like, some dead, like you said, dead baby or some horrific old thing like about it.
Yeah, it's very shocking. And the other thing is, cigarettes in Singapore are like $12 a pack. And so, you know, it's interesting because you see these anti-smoking movements, and that's a fantastic thing. I think that, you know, good health in general probably doesn't have a lot to do with smoking. And thing is, that's really interesting about the whole situation, and actually, I guess interesting might be the wrong word, but almost just shocking, is that, you know, these companies are continually putting crap in our food and, you know, changing the formulations of things, and, you know, we're the ones being hurt. A little while back, I watched the congressional hearings that had to do with Monsanto's Roundup Ready seeds actually becoming less effective. The weeds are basically starting to mutate on their own. They're starting to become resistant to Roundup. So basically, so I was watching these congressional hearings, and it was interesting. You know, they were kind of talking to Monsanto about these super weeds, and they're interviewing some experts about the whole situation. And it's funny because every time Monsanto basically referenced their customers, they would reference farmers, as opposed to, you know, the public.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, we do everything possible to make, you know, our customers or our clients, you know, their lives easier.
Except for not.
They don't say anything about, you know, the fact that we're eating this trash, you know, and they never reference that. And I guess that's one of the things that I don't know if that makes them feel better or makes them sleep at night, that they can go to bed and say, well, I made a farmer's life easier today.
I think that has to do with just the corporate runaround. I mean, I think they want to keep the big guys happy, even though they have to do the dirty work and then make the decisions whether, I mean, it's all dollars and cents when it comes to big corporations, obviously. And so it's like the lower upper management needs to make sure that they keep all the dollars and cents down so that the big fat cat's not happy about it, you know what I mean? And then when they release something about it, they tell you all the good things that they're doing for the farmers, but they don't mention any of the bad stuff that's going on for the farmers or any of the stuff that's actually going into the consumer's mouth.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And they don't mention the fact that they're putting small farms out of business left and right. You know, I heard another statistic out there, and this is, you know, I'm just recalling this, so it may not be exact, but it's close enough. And it had to do with small farms going out of business. And it said, you know, basically in the United States, every year, every week, you know, 1,300 small farms declare bankruptcy. And that, you know, out of the 280,000 small farms that they referenced in this article, the statistic, basically, I mean, you think about that situation, it's not going to be long until we don't have any small farms left. You know, we only have these big, huge monoculture, you know, corporate run farms. And if that's the case, it's like, you know, whatever they want to do, they'll just push through from a dollar and cents perspective. They won't really think about, well, what's best for the people eating this, or, you know, what's best for the people who are going to be using these ingredients. One of the big things that I try to push on this podcast is, you know, getting people back out and cooking again, so they can take pride in the ingredients that they're using, take pride in the food that they're crafting.
I mean, I don't cook enough of that as it is. I mean, it's not pure laziness, honestly. But I mean, I think that in general, the government should be for these small farms, for these smaller guys trying to get their things done, and they should have some. Is there any kind of kickbacks to smaller farms for? Does the government give you any kind of kickbacks for supplying these things, or can you write off like any of these like, you know, requirements that they give you off taxes or anything like that? Is all that stuff?
There's subsidies that are out there, but it seems like the subsidies. And you know, I'm by no means a farmer. I have a backyard full of animals, and I have
Dr. Doolittle Hill. Don't
garden every year, but I by no means am like, you know, a small farmer. It's, you know, I'm not creating food for people. I'm creating food from my family and their consumption, or you know, my neighbors. We love to trade food with the neighbors. I think it's really great, but the thing is that the subsidies that are out there, from what I know, basically benefit scale. So like if you plant, you know, 1,000 acres of corn, then you get a certain amount of money. If you plant 1,000,000 acres of corn, you get
a certain amount of money. So it's all based off a percentage of the percentage of what you are growing. And so if you're growing a percentage of practically nothing, then obviously that's not going to be very much, right? So
well, and they're always pushing scale. I mean, in my mind, food isn't necessarily something that should be scale driven. I think that there's benefit to producing things in small scale. I mean, you think about a lot of artisan type crafts and different things like that. The reason some of the objects or, you know, things that are created in artisan ways, it's just because it's small scale, because each item or each
quality over quantity. Anything,
kind of. Exactly.
Like it may be in a smaller scale, but you're providing maybe a different view on something. Kind of like microbrewers, kind of, is that kind of...
Yeah, yeah. In a sense, like, you think you go to a microbrew, you're always going to get better beer. You know, you go to Budweiser, you know what to expect. It's going to be tasteless. It's going to be like, you know, it's going to be your domestic, large run, you know, run of the mill, safe for everyone, you know.
Budweiser is sponsoring beer. This podcast.
But the thing is, it's like, I mean, it's true, though. I mean, you know, I don't think there's very many beer drinkers out there that would stand up for Budweiser over
their own microbrewer. Yeah, yeah, I agree. And I, and from a microbrewer standpoint, you can choose what you want, because like it's not the same old thing. I mean, like any, you can match up Budweiser with any beers, and they're kind of they're mostly similar. You know what I mean? I mean, there's some variety, but when you get to a microbrew, that's like your custom.
Well, that's when variety. You get your really creative approaches to beer. You know,
it can be transferred over to other things, like we were talking about with, I mean, not necessarily custom corn.
Well, I mean,
but I mean, like, you can have different flavors or different quality because of where it's grown and how it's treated and how it's, I mean.
I think you absolutely could have, you know, corn that has, you know, something interesting about it, or there's, you know, something unique about the variety or something. But you know, the way the industrial farming industry focuses on consistency, just like a lot of big industries in this world, you know, it tends to weed out all the variety. And I think that when you lose variety, you lose what's good about that product. I mean, I used to be just absolutely in love with coffee. I still do. I drink coffee all the time. And basically, you know, one of the best things about a good coffee is all of the details and all of the little things that it takes to actually make that cup a good cup of coffee. Anywhere from where the altitude that the coffee was grown at, to how it's processed, to how it's, you know, roasted, to, you know, the amount of time that elapses between when you buy it and when it was roasted, and to you know, the filtration of the water and the type of coffee.
I'm the same way with Mountain Dew. I only buy Don Quixote Mountain Dew, you know?
it's funny because, you know, I don't know. I guess it blows my mind that, you know, that we let this happen, that we as a society let our, you know, all of the good things in life just get erased for someone else's profit. I mean,
yeah.
You know, you think about all the beauty that could be crafted out of these, because, you know, food is to me one of the most beautiful things. I mean, it's the only art form really that you can experience with every sense that you have, if you think about it. You know, and the fact that we're just, it seems like we don't care anymore. It seems like we just don't care. You know,
like I was saying, I think that. How I feel about it is that, like, I want to feel that about food. Like, I hear people say so many things about food and stuff, but I don't have the, I guess, I, like I said, it's pure laziness. It's just, I think it's general populations are just lazy and ill-informed, I mean, in a lot of ways. I mean, I think that if a lot of people knew how easy it was to get into a lot of things. Like, it seems like, I mean, just in the last, like, 2 or 3 years, I mean, you've always been a really good cook, but just in the last 2 or 3 years, you've been getting into this farm thing like crazy, you know what I mean? And so, I think that it's definitely, it's about being ill-informed, you know? Like, I look at a Big Mac the same way as I've always looked at Big Mac. Big Macs have been around forever, you know what I mean? But I don't look at that Big Mac in the ways that I probably should. Where it comes from, what it's made out of. Like, I mean, I just think meat's meat. You know, I mean, I always hear the argument like, oh, you know, obviously, like, killing cows, we don't want to kill cows, you know, because they're living things and stuff. But I don't, and that doesn't bother me, per se. But the thing that bothers me is how that meat's, it's being refrozen, frozen over again, and chemicals being put into the cow's food and into us after we eat the cows. You know what I mean? Like, that's the real problem that I have with it. And that's where I'm like, I want to learn more about that. You know,
well, you know, and hopefully
a lot of people would feel that way.
As this podcast goes on, that sort of, you know, this information will get passed along. I mean, you know, there are so many different reasons why I choose to basically raise the animals that I do, and that, you know, I buy the kinds of food that I buy. And it all comes down to, you know, these things that, yeah, a lot of people look past, you know. I mean, you know, the way animals are raised make a huge difference in how they taste and you know, what, even what breed of animal. I said, you know, industrialization is all about consistency. It's all about pulling, raking it in and saying, how can we produce this product on a mass scale? Well, you know, it's that mass scale, it's that large scale that just ruins it all, because food is not the type of thing that needs to be crafted on a mass scale.
Yeah.
A big, you know, it's just not. It's the kind of thing that I think a lot of times,
cherish it, love it like a baby.
Well, really, in my life, you know, I've gone back and forth with eating habits and different things, and I've eaten, you know, I've eaten really well, and I've eaten really poorly, really
ramen noodle poor.
But I found that, you know, with me personally, when I'm eating poorly, I crave more food. I crave a larger amount of food. And I think it all comes down to satisfaction. Yeah. I think that if you're satisfied with the meal that you're given, that you're not going to overconsume. You're not going to have problems with wanting more, because you'll be satisfied. You're done.
I believe that that's true. I really do, because, I mean, like, I'm a bigger guy. I eat more food. And I think that that is, in comparison, when I was younger, my dad used to cook really nice food for us every evening. And it wasn't a lot of food. It was really decent food. And we got our fill, and we were good, and I felt good about it. And now I'm eating poorer than I ever have, thanks to a lot of, you know, schooling and stuff. But now I feel like I'm eating cheaper and poorer, but I'm eating so much more, because it's not satisfying to me. Like, I sit down and I scarf down some of, like, whole plate of food, and I'm like, plate of food, yummy. And then I get it done, and I'm like, oh man, what's next? Is there some cookies or something? I'm not even thinking about what I just ate. I'm not even thinking about, like even when I get the food, like, I'm the classic fat guy. I crave, like, the next meal. I'm like, when's dinner? What am I going to have for dinner? Bacon on it or something, you know? And then I get there and I eat it, and I'm always thinking about the next thing. And I think that that's definitely
a satisfaction thing.
Yeah, it's a satisfaction thing. I'm not satisfied, and that's, I think, a different problem with probably people who are overweight. I think the lot of reason why people are overweight is because they're unsatisfied with a lot of the food. There's a lot of food out there that's...
Yeah. Well, you know, and there is so many different reasons. I mean, but, you know, I do look at it as one of the main sorts of situations that if you're consuming without, you know, basically thinking about it and without actually being satisfied, then you're not really doing yourself any... You're not really doing yourself a favor. You know, and like I said, I've been all over the place in that realm too. I've always loved to cook, really, since I was like 15. And, you know, as I, you know, found myself getting busier, found myself, you know, like, not having as much time for cooking as I used to, I would just take these shortcuts. And it was like my consumption went through the roof. I gained a ton of weight. And then I changed my life at a certain point.
Yeah.
And, you know, really refocused my vision about food and my kind of thoughts on things. And that actually helped me out a lot, because I was able to lose a whole bunch of weight. I was able to actually feel more satisfied when I was eating. But the thing is, you know, you think about, weight's not the issue. It's about whether you're satisfying yourself, your soul, you know? I mean, food is, like I said, one of these most beautiful, just amazing art forms.
Do you want to hear something crazy? I just heard this recently. I this is a little off subject, but KFC is offering a $500 gift card you can buy. You can buy a $500 gift card at KFC. Why would you want to buy
all those, like, two, like, Yeah, we use the chicken as bread sandwich.
Yeah, the double, what is it? The double decker or something.
Double
like that.
Mega super burger.
It's chicken bread, so chicken for the bread, and then like bacon and then chicken again or something.
Yeah. So those of you who are not aware of what this is, what we're referring to is KFC actually has this
double down. That's what it's called.
Hamburger. It's called the double down, and it's like a piece of chicken with some bacon and some mayonnaise, and then another piece of chicken. It's like the chicken breasts are
the bread.
Bread. Supposedly the bread. And it just like that right there is like in my mind, like there's all these things that I, these little things that I attribute to, like, this is Americanism at its like best. This is us overeating and just becoming fat, and like, you know, and that right there is iconic.
Yeah.
Of the things that we should not be eating, you know, it blows my mind, you know, in a lot of my thoughts on, you know, and I think that we're really going to have to get into a lot of this because we're kind of getting off subject at a later time. But real quickly, a lot of my thoughts about meat is it's the kind of thing that used to be cherished because you actually had to raise an animal to consume meat. And, you know, you watch that animal and you grew that animal. I mean, it takes, you know, even, you know, 10 months, for instance, it takes, you know, a good 10 months to grow, or 8 to 10 months to grow a pig, you know?
Yeah.
But even that amount of time seems incredibly long compared to just rolling down to the grocery store and picking up some pork, you know? Or, so in a sense, like, people, I think, had a little bit more respect for the meat that they consumed because they had to grow the meat.
I think in the past, I mean, like, have you ever taken an agriculture class? Mm-hmm. I took an agriculture class in high school, and it wasn't required. It was an elective, and I learned so much about that. I loved it. I did horrible on every single test, but I got an A. My teacher was like, "You worked so hard. You did a great job." I busted my balls off when I was outside doing the work, and he gave me an A, and it was awesome. I loved it. And I think that there are so many people who missed that. I mean, like, that didn't reform me in any way about my whole entire life, but it did give me a little bit more, you know, knowledge into how food is made, where things come from, and, like, just a little bit more down to earth. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think before, a lot of people, I mean, that was, like, mandatory. I don't know if it was mandatory before, but Whenever I talk to my parents and stuff, they always say, you know, we had 4-H when we were kids. We had agriculture classes and stuff, and obviously they helped out on the farms and things like that. And I think that that's really a lot of why people are how they are, too. They don't have a sense of, like, pride in their work. And I think it has to do with a lot of work ethic, too. Yeah, I mean, like, people are lazier than ever these days, you know? And not just in the sense that their day-to-day life, but they're lazy in how they work. They want excuses. Every single thing that they do, it's not their fault. It's someone else's fault. Yeah. Or, you know, I couldn't do this because of something else. It's not my fault. Don't blame it on me, you know, so.
Hence the drive-through restaurant. I mean, like, yeah. You know, like, that onset of the drive-through was, you know, I think probably one of the worst things.
Pizza Hut used to be a dine-in restaurant. That used to be, I remember going down to Pizza Hut, dining in, and not to say Pizza Hut's healthy or anything, but I remember going down to Pizza Hut, getting the big old glass of soda, root beer, or whatever, you know, and dining in Pizza Hut. That was like a treat, and it was great. I thought it was great, and I think, you know, there's a lot of fast food restaurants that have come from that, and now they're just this.
Well, and that is really interesting, because you think about the idea of sitting down to eat, the idea of taking the moment. And this is another thing that, you know, I think is kind of missing in today's world is the actual practice of just sitting down to eat. You know, people like eat in their cars. They you know, they eat in the weirdest places. I mean, you know, they're like
on the toilet.
Yeah, seriously. I know this guy. He was downing a sandwich on the toilet once. But that's the thing, is why are we in such a hurry? Like, what do we need to get back to? We need to get back to what? Wasting our time working, spending, you know, like,
countless hours on YouTube searching great videos. That's what we need to do.
I mean, it just blows my mind. And, you know, I guess that could be its own topic in general as well. But, you know, we are starting to kind of drone on here, so I'm going to go ahead and close out this section. But this is Scott Spot. So,
all right, see you later, guys.
We'll have Scott back in the future, and we'll go ahead and chit chat with him every now and then. It up for today's show, please feel free to call us by going to our website, thegoatcast.blogspot.com. Again, that's thegoatcast.blogspot.com. All right, see you next time.